Pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane most people have never heard of, and a man who spent 2 decades of his life making sure it would fly again. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Taildragger, and this is the hangar, the Bristol Blenheim. If you know your Second World War history, you know the Spitfire, you know the Lancaster, you know the Mosquito, but the Blenheim, she's the one that gets left out of the conversation. And that is a shame because on September 3, 1939, the day Britain declared war on Germany, it was a Blenheim that flew the very first offensive mission of the war. Not a Spitfire, not a Hurricane. A Bristol Blenheim, piloted by Flying Officer Andrew McPherson, crossing the North Sea to photograph the German fleet at Wilhelmshaven. The next day, Blenheims went back to bomb those same ships. 5 of the 10 aircraft were shot down. That was the Blenheim's war. First in taking terrible losses, flown by crews who knew the odds and went anyway. By 1942, she was already obsolete, replaced by faster, better-armed aircraft, and after the war the Blenheims just vanished. Scrapped, melted down, forgotten. By the 1970s there was not a single complete Bristol Blenheim left on the planet. Now here's where it gets interesting. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. So how do you restore an airplane when none of them exist anymore? You start with a wreck and a man who refuses to quit. Graham Warner was a British businessman who made his money in the auto trade. But his passion was aviation, specifically the aircraft of the Second World War. And he became obsessed with one idea, bringing a Bristol Blenheim back to airworthy condition. Not as a static display, not as a museum piece behind velvet ropes, a flying, breathing, roaring airplane. In 1984, Warner acquired the remains of a Blenheim Mark IV that had been recovered from a crash site. Now when I say remains, I want you to understand what that means. This was not an airplane sitting in a barn with flat tires and a seized engine. This was wreckage, twisted metal, corroded aluminum, pieces of an airplane that had been in the ground for decades. Most people would look at that pile of parts and see scrap. Graham Warner looked at it and saw a Blenheim. He brought the project to the Aircraft Restoration Company at Duxford, the legendary Imperial War Museum airfield in Cambridgeshire, England, and the work began. If you have ever restored an airplane, even a common Cessna or a Piper Cub, you know the drill. You know the parts that are discontinued, the suppliers that went out of business 40 years ago, the drawings that were lost in a warehouse fire. Now multiply that by a factor of 100. Because this was not a Cessna. This was a 1930s British medium bomber that nobody had built since 1943. Bristol Aeroplane Company was long gone. The tooling was long gone. The jigs, the fixtures, the engineering drawings, all of it scattered to the winds. The restoration team had to become archaeologists, detectives, and engineers all at once. They tracked down original blueprints from archives across England. They reverse-engineered parts from the wreckage itself, measuring corroded originals down to thousands of an inch, and fabricating new components by hand. The Mercury engines, those big Bristol radial engines that powered the Blenheim, had to be sourced from around the world. Some came from other wrecks, some came from collections. Each one was torn down to the bare crankcase and rebuilt from the ground up. Think about that for a moment. Every rivet, every skin panel, every control cable and pulley and hinge, made or remade by hand, often by volunteers who showed up at Duxford on weekends because they believed in what Graham Warner was trying to do. The fuselage alone took years. The Blenheim had a distinctive mid-wing configuration with a glazed nose for the bomb aimer and a powered dorsal turret behind the cockpit. Reproducing that greenhouse nose section, getting the compound curves right in the aluminum and the perspex, that was an art form unto itself. The old-timers who had worked in British aircraft factories during the war were consulted. Some of them came out of retirement to lend their hands and their memories to the project. Imagine being 80 years old, standing in a workshop at Duxford, shaping a piece of aluminum the same way you shaped them in 1941, and knowing that this time it is not for a war, it is for remembrance. The wing structure was another mountain to climb. The Blenheim used a stress skin construction that was advanced for its time, and replicating the internal structure, the spars and ribs and stringers, required fabrication techniques that the modern aerospace industry had largely abandoned. You could not just order these parts from a catalog. Every piece had to be crafted, fitted, checked, and checked again. And then there was the paint. That might sound trivial, but if you're going to bring back an airplane from the dead, you owe it to the crews who flew her to get the colors right. The team researched the exact camouflage schemes used by Blenheim squadrons. the dark earth and dark green upper surfaces, the black undersides for night operations. They dug through squadron records to match the airplane to a specific unit, a specific aircraft, so that when she flew again, she would carry the identity of a real Blenheim that real men had flown into combat. After years of painstaking work, the Blenheim flew again in the mid-1990s. I want you to picture that first flight. Duxford Airfield, the same grass and concrete where Spitfires and Hurricanes launched during the Battle of Britain. The sound of those two Bristol Mercury 15 radial engines coughing to life. 9 cylinders each. That distinctive clatter of a British radial warming up. The smell of oil and avergies and hot metal. The prop wash flattening the grass behind the tail, and then she's rolling. The tail comes up, and for the first time in over 50 years, a Bristol Blenheim is in the English sky.
Graham Warner reportedly wept. I do not blame him one bit. But here's the part of the story that breaks your heart and then puts it back together again. On August 18, 2003, during a routine flight at Duxford, the restored Blenheim suffered an engine failure on takeoff. She crashed on the airfield. The pilot and navigator survived, thank God, but the airplane was badly damaged after nearly 20 years of restoration work. She was back on the ground in pieces. Now most people would have walked away. Most people would have looked at the crumpled metal and the broken spars and said, "That is enough. We proved it could be done. Let us put what is left in a museum and move on." Graham Warner was not most people. He looked at the wreckage and he started planning the rebuild. The second restoration was, in some ways, even more ambitious than the first. Warner and his team decided to rebuild the aircraft as a Blenheim Mark I, the earlier variant with a shorter nose, and the Mercury 8 engines, representing the aircraft as it appeared in the early days of the war. This meant additional research, additional fabrication, additional years of work. The Bristol Mercury engines had to be sourced and rebuilt again, the airframe had to be repaired, and in many sections completely reconstructed. The rebuild took another decade, a decade, think about the commitment that represents. Warner was not a young man when the second restoration began, and he knew that every year that passed was a year he might not see the finished product. But he kept at it. The volunteers kept at it. The craftsmen at the aircraft restoration company kept at it. Because that airplane mattered. It mattered to the memory of the crews who flew Blenheims. It mattered to the history of a nation that threw everything it had into the sky during its darkest hour.
In 2015, the rebuilt Blenheim Mark I took to the air again from Duxford. 12 years after the crash, 31 years after Graham Warner acquired that first pile of wreckage, she flew. She flew beautifully. The sound of those Mercuries echoing off the old hangars at Duxford, the airplane banking gently over the Cambridgeshire countryside, the sunlight catching those dark earth and dark green camouflage colors. It was by any measure one of the great triumphs in warbird restoration history, and what makes it even more poignant is what the Blenheim represents. She is not the glamorous fighter. She is not the mighty heavy bomber that flattened cities. She is the workhorse. The airplane that went out first took the worst of it and kept going until something better came along. The Blenheim crews had some of the highest loss rates in Bomber Command and Coastal Command. Entire squadrons were chewed up in the first years of the war, and for decades those crews had no memorial in the sky. No flying example of the airplane they risked everything in. Graham Warner gave them that memorial. Not with speeches or plaques, but with Mercury engines and aluminum skin and 10,000 hours of labor driven by nothing more than the stubborn conviction that some airplanes are too important to stay dead. Today, that Blenheim flies at air shows across the United Kingdom. She's the only airworthy Bristol Blenheim in the world. When she passes overhead, low and slow, those radials humming, she carries the names and the stories of every crew that ever climbed into a Blenheim and headed for the enemy coast. That is what a restoration is really about. Not just metal and engines, memory, honor, the refusal to let history become silence. The details for today's segment came from the Aircraft Restoration Company's published accounts, the Imperial War Museum Duxford Archives, and several histories of Bomber Command's early war operations. You can find more stories like this one at radiohangar.com. That Blenheim is still out there flying, and every time she does, Graham Warner's 31 years of stubbornness win all over again. See you next time.